Yeah, okay, so let's... No, we didn't do the Beis HaChayes. Okay, yeah, there were aspects, right? We weren't... Okay, well, let's take this opportunity to finish up a little bit from Perek Chaf, which we didn't quite complete. In Perek Chaf, we talked about some of the aspects of Torah that were observed by the Avos, and the idea was, we said that by Avram Avinu, he did it because of Teras Chesed, right? Avram Avinu had Teras Chesed, he was connected to the totality of Torah that way. Yitzchak, we spoke about specifically Shechita, right? Because Yitzchak is Midas Hadin, and Shechita is that kind of a thing of Neitel Midas Hadin. We talked about to some degree what that means, the idea of Shechita being something which subordinates, which breaks something down. Yaakov Avinu, we talked about his connection to Shabbos, and the idea that what was that Yaakov Avinu is beyond all boundaries, right? Yeah, a person who keeps Shabbos is zeche to a nachla bli mitzorim, to a portion without limits, without boundaries, einik Shabbos, and that's connected to the sanctity, something which transcends boundaries and limitations of this world. That's Yaakov Avinu, and that's why Shabbos, which to some degree is that transcending of the physical world, was connected to Yaakov Avinu. That was what we talked about last time. I don't know, did I share with you, just as a note, I think it's a very interesting note, that the mitzvah of Shabbos, which Yaakov keeps in order to merit a portion without limits and without boundaries, is specifically the mitzvah of Tchumen, which is that you have a specific boundary in a specific location that you are in on Shabbos. That din is specifically the one which he kept. So it's very ironic that he is zeicha to transcend the boundaries because of the fact that he has the tchumen of Shabbos, the specific place. Yeah, I'm sorry?
I don't know if it relates to anything, but I think Rashi mentioned in this last week's Parsha that Yosef was, I guess, strict on Shechita when he had Ephraim do the shechting for the brothers.
Right, utfayach tevach v'hochem. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's like a link back to Yitzhak, or if that's not really in the parsha here, if that relates to all the brothers.
It's a good question. I don't know. It's a good question. And it could be that once Yitzhak brings it in, so it's there. It's there for all of them. But it's a good point. It's a good point. Now, just the one thing I do remember bringing up the point, and the one thing which I mentioned to you by allusion, I think a little bit, is the idea of Hamokai, right? That when we speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being the place of the world, relative to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we take for ourselves a specific place, a specific narrow place relative to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in that sense, when a person davens, a person, even though we generally don't have a kvius in tefillah, we're not supposed to make our tefillah fixed, but a person is supposed to be kaveh amokim l'tefillasai, a fixed place for davening, because we're standing before the Ribbono Shel Olam, who is the place of the world. In tefillah, we understand that to some degree we are contained within him, so therefore we have to have a specific spot that we stand before him. And to some degree, it might be that on Shabbos we're trying to do the same thing. When we speak about the idea of having a specific tchum of Shabbos, is because we understand that we stand in the world relative to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's not that we're masters of the world, that's our limitation which we learn on Shabbos, and therefore we have to some degree put ourselves in a specific place, like any nivra, like any creature, like anyone who has that kind of limitation. Okay, well, that's enough for that, for what we're going to talk about today. Okay, so he says now, it could be, says the Maharal, that one would think that they didn't keep any other mitzvahs, they just kept these specific mitzvahs. But he says, no, I don't think that that's what he did, what they did. They could have indeed kept other mitzvahs, They could have indeed kept, or they did indeed keep, observe other mitzvahs. However, these mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Shechita, the mitzvah of Shabbos, was specifically associated with them. It's almost like the idea of mitzvah v'aisa, the difference between a person who does a mitzvah voluntarily or the person does a mitzvah because they are commanded. Something which you have to do is beyond that which you choose to do. If it wasn't more so, then you wouldn't be obligated to do so. And so over here, this mitzvah of Shechita for Yitzchak, of Shabbos for Yaakov, because it was so much theirs, therefore it was like a mitzvah, it was like a mitzvah which they were commanded to do. So even if you say they fulfilled other mitzvahs, the other mitzvahs, but these are the ones that the Pasuk specifies, hints to specifically that they kept because this mitzvah was specifically towards them. So let's take a couple of minutes here to talk about this idea of mitzvah v'aisa, and the idea that there's a special madrega, a special level for mitzvah v'aisa, for a mitzvah you're commanded to do. You know, the Gemara brings this as a discussion. Classic Gemara, where the Gemara says that Rav Yosef was blind. And Rav Yosef said, originally, if somebody told me that I didn't have to do the mitzvahs, I would make a Yuma Tava L'Rabbanan. I would make a celebratory feast, the Sudas Mitzvah. Why? Not because I would say, great, I'm off the hook, but because I would say, look, I keep all the mitzvahs, but I'm keeping the mitzvahs without being obligated to do so. And I would think that would be better. That would say more. However, now that I was taught, it's better to be commanded and do a mitzvah than otherwise. So he says, now somebody who tells me that a blind person is obligated to do mitzvahs, I would make a festive meal for the Rabbanan, because I'd rather be commanded. So we can understand, of course, the first side, that the person thinks that if they're doing it voluntarily, so that's a great thing, you know, I don't even have to, and I'm doing it nevertheless. That shows something special, right? The idea always is, like the Maral himself, as Mavar explained, some of you may remember from the Bir HaGaila, where the Maral writes about the idea of Divrei Chachamim, right? He speaks in the first Be'er about the power of Divrei Chachamim, of the words which Chazal said, as opposed to the words of the Torah. Right? The whole Bir HaGaila is about the role of the words of the Chazal. So he speaks here about Chazal when they enacted things. And he brings the Gemara, which says, Chadoshim gam yishanim doidi tzafantalach. Right? New ones, as well as the old ones, my beloved, you have put away for you. So the Gemara says, doidi, my beloved, the Chadoshim, excuse me, the new ones versus the old ones, the new ones refer to words that the Chachamim enacted, as opposed to the Yeshanim, which are words that that are there midyei raisa. Says the Gemara that Chal Yisrael is saying, Rabbeinu Shlalem, we created many new laws for ourselves beyond the old ones that you had given us. Says the Maharal, what's the idea that the Pasuk refers to it as Daidi, my beloved? Because when a person does what they're told, that's Yira. That's serving God out of fear. When a person goes beyond, that's Ava. When we can point to the words of the sages and they say they didn't just do what you told them to do, but they went beyond and they legislated and they created and they observed even further, that shows Ava. And that's why the relationship to Hashem is described as Daidi. Right? That's the Chassidus that the Ramchal speaks about in the Mesilas Yesharim, where he says, when you have a relationship between people who care about each other, so then they don't just do what the person told them. They go even beyond. So it's a statement of Ava to go beyond what you're asked to do. So Rav Yosef was pleased that to him he wasn't asked to do the mitzvahs, but he was able to show that he loved Hashem, and therefore he did the mitzvahs. But on the other hand, says the Gemara, there's Gadol HaMitzvah V'Aisa Mishena Mitzvah V'Aisa. When a person does the mitzvah that they're commanded to do, it's greater than a person who volunteers. What's the idea? So the way the Maral understands it, I mean, there are different formulations. Tosfos speaks about the Yetzer Hara is going to be stronger when a person is commanded to do it. So it's a bigger challenge, when you have to, than when you're just choosing to. There's the romantic ease of just trying to do something without pressure. However, the way the Maharal understands it, and I think to some degree as well, this can be found in Rishonim, is that the idea is that if you're commanded to do it, that means it's the job for you. It's what you're about. It's what it is about. However, if you're just volunteering to do it, then it's not really you. And you're not really it. You're not really it. And a person who volunteers to do something which he didn't have to do, right? So the job doesn't rely on him to be done. The job doesn't rely on him to be done. And he was not obviously created to do that job, because if he was created to do that job, if that's his purpose, then he wouldn't be a volunteer. He'd have to do it. He'd have to do it. It would be defined for him. Again, sometimes you can look in situations and you could say, okay, well, you know, this guy lives to volunteer, right? You know, in terms of jobs and things like that. But when we talk about charges from Hashem, Yisborach, mitzvahs from Hashem, right? What Hashem expects of you is what you're here for. What lekach noitzarta, right? That's a big difference. That's a big difference than something that you just volunteer or choose to do. It's very nice that you're doing it. Don't get me wrong. And we appreciate it. You must love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're doing things beyond that which you have to. But that's not specifically what you particularly are about. What you are about. The level of expectation, the level of connection to it is going to be completely different. Yeah.
Does this apply today? Because it's, I can understand this by Yaakov and Yitzhak, who they had, you know, one thing that was their special thing. But nowadays, everyone has this basket that everyone's required to do. And my understanding is that we're supposed to find our derech and Torah, like what appeals to us. If we love learning Maharal, we should focus on Maharal. If we love learning Gemara, we should focus on Gemara. If we love learning Halacha, we should focus on Halacha. But it seems like we have to find, I thought we had to find our own path, which fits us. Like, we know ourselves, and we have to find our path in there, whereas what's commanded, what's, I guess, tailored to us, is this whole, the whole suite,
right,
which might feel completely at ends to us.
Okay, so, you know, there's no question that today we have a status of being mitzvah v'isa everything. We're commanded to do everything. But there are things which we do, you know, if a person goes to Lahavdil, if a person goes to school, goes to college, right, and they want to get a degree in accounting, right, or in computer science, they're going to have to take English literature. Why? Because there are certain general requirements that everybody's got to do. But what do you mean? I'm specializing in this. You're right, you're specializing in this, but that doesn't mean that you can specialize in this without having basics in everything. Every Jew is obligated to do the Targum mitzvahs that are applicable to them. I won't say 613 mitzvahs, because as you know, many of those mitzvahs don't apply to every Jew, or every Jew at every time, to actually do. Right? You don't have mitzvahs of the Kohanim, you don't have mitzvahs of kings, you don't have mitzvahs of, you know, that don't apply to you particularly, based on Hamikdash isn't standing, whatever. But the mitzvahs which apply to you, you have an obligation to do every single one of them. They're all the basic requirements of every Jew. Right? And in truth, every Jew has an obligation as well to learn all of the Torah. Every Jew has an obligation to learn all of the Torah. However, at the same time, we speak about the idea that there's going to be an area of mitzvah that is yours to really run with. Right? That's not just your basic requirement, it's your specialty. It's your key, as the way the Rambam put it, in your key to Elam Haba, to the world to come, to eternity. There's an area of Taira, Malcham Shalibai Chafetz, which might be your specific area of Taira, that you thrive in most. That doesn't mean that you can neglect the rest. It means that, you know, basic, you try to have basic knowledge with other things, and in this you thrive. Now, nowadays, we're not so good at that. You read about the purists, you read the introductions of, let's say, they read the introduction of the Chaye Adam, where he speaks about the basic response. He's there to teach halacha. You know, he says, you know, like, you know, come on, everybody goes, they pick up a masechta, they learn Bava Kama, and they're going to spend 10 hours a day, you know, with the learning their Bava Kama, learning that, you know, those few pages of Bava Kama. What about the rest of Torah that they have to know? What about the basics? How do they know how to daven? How do they know how to keep Shabbos? How do they know how to eat kosher? How do they know all these things? So you have to have this general curriculum, and then you have to specialize. Because of where we are, so we tend sometimes to spend our time on specialties rather than on basics, and we do have to find a balance. We do have to find a balance. But yes, you're correct when you say a person has his thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him specifically for. And the Gra writes that once upon a time, a person would go to the Navi, and the Navi would tell him, this is the area of specialty that you were created for, that you have to develop, in Torah, in Mitzvahs, in Avoda, in Parnasa. Right? And that's why we daven at the end of the Shemona Esrei, Shibana Beis HaMikdash Meher V'Yameinu, V'Sein Chalkeinu B'Seir Asecha. The Beis HaMikdash will be built, and you will give us our specific portion in the Torah. Because then, we'll have the revelation of the Beis HaMikdash, which brings with it the Nevuah and the Urim V'Tumim, all the things that could tell us, instead of us sort of like stabbing in the dark, with some degree of illumination provided by what we're interested in and what our qualities seem to tell us to do. There you're going to have it zeroing in on it, not just, you know, getting some general sense of direction. So that's true. Everything you're saying is true, and that's an extension of this thing. That's what the Ramchal writes in the Derech Hashem when he says HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man to be like him. But that's a job that is beyond any specific man. God in his complexity of perfection in all realms. So then what happened was that the charge of perfecting the godly attributes was divided up amongst mankind. And everybody has a specific job to do. Everybody has a specific aspect of Shleimus that's theirs particularly to develop. And says the Ramchal, if a person's going to have big eyes and they're going to look at what somebody else is doing and they're going to just say, Esa Ken Gamani, I want to do what he's doing, they could be really forfeiting their purpose in life because they're doing somebody else's job and they're neglecting their own. Right? That's the idea that you're talking about. And in our world, that remains, except we have basic requirements, and we have to figure out our particular niche beyond that. Here in this period of Kaidah Matan Torah, right, the Ramchal, the Maharal is speaking about the fact that the Torah points out certain mitzvahs. Now, it could be they as well did all of the mitzvahs. But these were the mitzvahs they were, so to speak, charged with. These were the mitzvahs they brought out into the world because these mitzvahs were them. The mitzvah of Shechita was Yitzchak. The mitzvah of Shabbos was Yaakov Avinu. That was what he was built for. That was what he was defined for. And that is Gadol HaMetzuvah V'Aisa Mish'ein HaMetzuvah V'Aisa. I think the Ran says this to a certain degree. It's not in the same formulation at all of words, but in a certain sense I think he says the same thing, or a similar thing, I should say. The Ran, I mean, I may be reading into it a little bit in Iran, but, you know, we have a notion of a ger toshav. What's a ger toshav? As opposed to a regular ger, a regular convert who joins the Jewish people, a ger toshav is a non-Jew who remains a non-Jew, but he is, ger toshav means he's welcome to live amongst the Jewish people. What does that mean? Normally, with the Kananim, we'd have to destroy them, right? But if this person accepted upon himself properly to keep the seven mitzvahs that apply to the Bnei Noach, then we could let them live amongst us. So the Ran speaks about the idea that even though everybody has an obligation of mitzvah, everybody has an obligation of the Sheva mitzvahs, but this Ger Taishav is accepting upon himself, and he's saying, I accept that responsibility. It's not just you're telling me I have to do it and I'm ignoring it. I accept that responsibility. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara says that a guy who keeps the Sheva Mitzvahs, right? A guy who keeps the Sheva Mitzvahs gets reward. But he doesn't get reward like a Mitzvah Va'isa, like someone who's commanded to do it. He gets reward like someone who's not commanded and does it. That's what the Gemara has a whole discussion. Oh, now they don't get reward. Says, well, they don't get reward. We see proofs that they get reward. They get reward, but not like somebody who's commanded to do it. So it's a very difficult Gemara, because the Gemara started off and said, oh, now they don't have to keep the Sheva Mitzvah. Says, well, why? Because they ignored the Mitzvahs, they don't have to keep them? Oh, they do have to keep them. But, right, we don't reward them. Well, you do reward them. Oh, they do have to keep them, and we do reward them, but we reward them like somebody who didn't have to keep them. That doesn't make sense. At the first glance, it doesn't make sense. What does that mean? If you're telling me that they have to keep them, and of course, as a result, they're going to get reward. Why should they get reward like someone who's not commanded and does it? So the idea is that the person who undertakes it as a responsibility, right, a ger taishav who undertakes it as a responsibility and keeps the mitzvahs and says, Rabbeinu Shalom, I know you need people in the world who will maintain the world, who will maintain the world the way it's supposed to be. Then, that person is a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The idea of schar, a reward like a mitzvah v'aisa, is where a person does it out of a sense that they understand that they were made for it, that it's their responsibility to do it, that it's specific to them. A person who keeps it and says, you know, I think it's a nice thing not to steal. I'm going to choose not to steal. Then their keeping of the mitzvah is not intrinsic. They don't understand it as intrinsic and as essential to them. And therefore, okay, very nice. You want to do a nice thing? I'm gonna also be nice. I'm going to give you something for it. But that idea of fulfillment of purpose is not there. A ger taishav graduates because he says, no, I understand it's my responsibility, it's my place. That's a different story. So that's the grand. That's the nature of mitzvah v'aisa. It's a very important understanding. In other words, you read the some of the other interpretations. At first glance, I think what he's saying is really just the deeper meaning of them. Okay, you know, when you have to do it, so then there's nudniks. You know, the etaras starts, you know, tries to get in your way because of pressure. This idea is very, very essential. When you do something that you're charged with doing, understand this is my role. This is my purpose. That's very, very different than a person who says, you know what, why not? Let me do it. It's a nice thing. Let me do it. It's not nice. It's essential. That's what Shechita was for Yitzchak. That's what Shabbos was for Yaakov. Okay. So that's one point that he continues to make here in Perekhov. He goes on to say, right now all of this was said to say, you know, the truth is the Avos maybe kept all the mitzvahs. Yitzchak and Yaakov, not just Avram Avinu, that it says about him that he kept everything. They could have kept all the mitzvahs. But, says the Maharal, and this is a great chiddush, I wish I could say I understood it fully, right? I have questions on it, I'll share them with you. But, says the Maharal, this applies to mitzvahs haseh. Even if we're going to say Yitzchak and Yaakov volunteered to keep the Torah, that was the positive commandments, but not the prohibitions. Not the mitzvahs haseh. The mitzvahs haseh, they didn't. This, of course, accomplishes for him two obvious things. One obvious thing that accomplishes for him is that it accomplishes the difference between Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov. Right? Beyond what we said before. We said before the difference is that Avram, because he was Torah's Chesed, the whole Torah was essential to him. But Yitzchak and Yaakov, they weren't Torah's Chesed, so therefore the Torah wasn't essential to them. There were specific mitzvahs that were. But they were keeping all the Torah anyway. Maybe they were volunteering. No, they weren't keeping all the Torah. Avram kept all the Torah. They kept the mitzvah saseh, the positive commandments. The other obvious issue which it gets rid of, which it takes care of, is Yaakov being married to two sisters. Right? That's like the big glaring problem that we have in them keeping kol ha-Torah kula. And remember, the Maharal before rejected what the Ramban said, which was that, oh, but it wasn't in Eretz Yisrael, and they only had to keep the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. So the Maharal, the way he addresses it fundamentally, is that they didn't keep the mitzvahs laisaseh. They didn't keep the mitzvahs. He's going to have another approach also, but this is the way he addresses it here, that they didn't keep the mitzvahs laisaseh. Why should there be a difference between the mitzvahs saseh and the mitzvahs laisaseh?
Especially since it's come prepared for us.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Well, like, under no circumstances can you...
Very good. Excellent. You can never go against the mitzvahs laisaseh, even if you lose all your money. Right? A person has to give up all the money in the world. A person has to give up their job rather than work on Shabbos or then eat non-kosher or even, you know, cook meat and milk together. You know, the only job I can get is as a short-order chef at McDonald's. Right? Sorry. Right? Give up your job. Give up all the money in the world in order to not transgress the mitzvah laisaseh of cooking meat and milk together. Right? But when it comes to mitzvah saseh, let's say you have a job, right? And it's before Sukkos, and you have to go now, otherwise you're not going to get a lulav and esrog. Right? But the boss says, I need you now, right? And if you leave now, don't come back. You lose your job. You don't have to. So you won't have a Lulav and Esrog. Not just you won't have it. You won't even be able to bench Lulav and Esrog. We're not talking about you won't have one, but your friend will give you his, and you'll make a bracha, and then you'll give it back. There will be no Lulav and Esrog in your house. There'll be no matzah in your house. You don't have an obligation to give up all your money in order to fulfill that mitzvah. Right? There are limitations. Exactly what the limitations are is serious questions. Right? Exactly how that works. So you're pointing out, for us, mitzvahs leisasei are more severe. And here we're saying, mitzvahs leisasei, before they were given, why bother? Why bother? So the way the Maharal says it is like this. It's a chiddush, and I struggle with it from our understanding of mitzvahs leisasei, but he says like this. He says, mitzvahs asei is lekinyan maila v'hashlama. A positive commandment is done in order to gain some maila, some greater level, some greater step to perfection. And they wanted those steps to perfection, so therefore they did mitzvahs asei. But a mitzvahs leisasei doesn't give you anything. It's just that we say, don't do it. So if I didn't tell you not to do it, then you can do it. It's actually not. It's active transgression of the prohibition. He's eating treif, right? He's eating treif. But I didn't tell him not to. So the commander, right? The prohibition doesn't exist if the person didn't tell you not to. The mitzvah is being told to do it because it's to give you some special level. So therefore, if I do it, I'm going to get something good. Now, the indication that he brings to this is that mitzvahs asei, when you do a mitzvah, you get schar. However, when you don't do something which is forbidden, for that, generally speaking, there is no schar. There is no reward. Right? For non-transgression, there's no reward. Now, it's hard to understand this idea because of two things. First of all, it's true, the fact that right now you're not eating treif is not something that you get rewarded for. However, if you were very hungry, right, and an opportunity to eat treifus came to you, and you said, I resist it, I won't do it, so then you do get schar for that. You do get schar for that. Right? The same Gemara says that. So, right, if the Bo'aver Liyale, the Maral himself quotes it, right? So, if Avram Avinu does the Avera, right, we say, oh, it's not a big deal to keep a Leisasei because there's no schar. What do you mean? If you pass up the opportunity to transgress on a Leisasei, so then that is going to be something. That is going to be something. He brings Rabbi Hartman brings in the Gurayi and Vayigash, actually in this coming week's parsha, where the Maral has a big discussion about this. So he says that we're not supposed to prohibit ourselves in things that we weren't prohibited in. That's a general rule. You're not supposed to expand the prohibitions. So before it was usher, there's nothing to do. So that's one issue. I don't understand exactly how he derives from the schar thing, that would be what it would be. But on the other hand, another proof which he brings, by the way, is that is there any value in a woman kayan not going to a funeral, or for that matter, in a male kayan not going to, in a male Yisrael not going to a funeral? Is there any value in that?
She could be pregnant. The woman could be pregnant, and then they have a kohen baby.
Yeah, well. Okay, that's not necessarily an issue or a problem either until it gets ready to come out. But let's say she's not pregnant. Let's say she just gave birth, right? Would there be any chumrah for her not to go to a funeral? No. Why? Says the Maral, because it's a leisasei. There's no such thing as a person volunteering to observe a leisasei that they're not prohibited against doing. So he says by the same token, that would be true as well for the oveis. Now that's a good serious proof to me that I could even understand, right? But the the problem is like this. The problem is like this, that we would normally understand, you know, like the way the Ramchal writes about Ner Hashem, that the things which HaKadosh Baruch Hu prohibited, he prohibited because there was something in them that was corrosive, that was negative. Right? That caused the prohibition. So why didn't Hashem give the mitzvahs to the avos before the Torah was given? So whatever, you could have all kinds of things about why he didn't give them the command, but to make it, he didn't give them the mitzvahs haseh either. He didn't give the mitzvahs haseh either. So what does he mean when he says, okay, but the mitzvahs haseh will give you something positive, and therefore, because it'll give you something positive, so therefore the person would want to do it even if they weren't commanded. And the mitzvahs lais haseh, by doing them, it brings in something negative. So wouldn't you want to avoid that even if you weren't commanded? I don't understand really well. I mean, Maharal's approach is not like that. Maharal's approach is, if you're not commanded, then it's because it's not an issue for you. But a mitzvah saseh, there would still be some benefit to derive. Yeah.
Is the negative aspect or corrosive aspect the punishment in itself for doing the negative thing, or is there additional punishment on top of the corrosion?
I would venture to say that there's additional. I don't know exactly how to separate it or cut it out, because our main focus is the issue itself. But what I mean by additional is that we always divide it into two things. One is that the thing itself is corrosive, and the second thing is ignoring God is corrosive. Mm-hmm. Right? So the fact that God told the person not to do it, and they do it anyway, that's creating a distance between themselves and God. In the case of the others, that wouldn't be true.
Right,
he didn't tell them not to do it, so therefore that wouldn't be an issue. But for the same reason that he would tell them later not to do it, this too would be a case. And the Maharal himself cites something like this. Why? Because the Maharal asks on what he says that, oh, the Avos weren't commanded in Torah. That's why Yaakov could marry two sisters. He says, but one second. The Gemara in Pesachim speaks about being mechabed, somebody in benching, you know, the Avos in benching for the ultimate Suda. So Yaakov says, no, I don't want to. Why? Because I married two sisters. Well, he just said he was allowed to. Says, well, no. The thing is that since eventually the Torah would be given, and according to the Torah, it says you shouldn't marry two sisters, but yet Hashem said to Yaakov, it's okay, you can marry two sisters. So there must have been something missing in Yaakov that it was okay for him to do what would be forbidden for the Jewish people later. And that's why he didn't want to bench. You know, like, that's part of this thing, you would say. You know, that they did it. You know, it's still some. Obviously, if the Torah later says you shouldn't do it, then it's something to avoid. So I don't understand so well. Huh?
Getting back to the whole idea where, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying I won't go to a funeral, okay? There did used to be people called chaverim, right, who refrained from becoming tamei. Like, was that different because it was a mikdash?
That was chaverim who were careful to even eat chulin b'tara, right? They wanted to always maintain the standard of tara as much as possible. I don't think it's because of the reason of lenefesh le'itama ba'amud. A kohen's not forbidden to touch a sheretz. A kohen's just forbidden to go to a funeral. A kohen's not forbidden to become tamei, period. He's forbidden to go to come in contact with the mace. The chaverim wanted to maintain tara, a standard of Tara, a strict standard of Tara, when whatever they did. On the side, they used to change people's flat tires. I'm just kidding. this is different. Now, Gesamal gets into a whole shtickle Tara about this to explain other halachas. He explains why by Yosef, right? Tvayach tevach v'hochein, why they shechted, and he took away the Gid Anosha, and Taisus has a kasha. You know, the Gemara proves from this that they were commanded in Gid Anosha, but one second, they weren't commanded in Shechita, and they still did it. Says the Maral, the idea is because Shechita was a mitzvah saseh, but Gid Anosha is a mitzvah lais saseh. So Shechita is a mitzvah saseh they would have done even if they weren't commanded. Gid Anosha, which is a mitzvah, say they wouldn't have, they, you know, it didn't matter. Similarly, he says, and this is really beautiful, he says, we have a discussion in the Gemara about tachrichim, about shrouds, right? That you can use kiloyim, you can use, you know, shatnas for a shroud, right? So Taisvis asks, why can you use shatnas for a shroud? Right? It should be laig l'rush. We worry about doing mitzvahs in front of a mace, in front of a corpse, because it's like taunting them. We can do it, and you can't anymore. Ha! Right? We have a whole discussion about wrapping a mace in a talus. Do you wrap a mace in a kosher talus? Or maybe you do it specifically in a non-kosher talus. Why? Because, you know, he can't fulfill the mitzvah anymore, right? So it's like taunting him that he can't fulfill the mitzvah anymore. So says Taisvis, so why doesn't the Gemara have the same problem with wrapping him in kilayim and shatnas? Answers the Maral, according to his yesod, it's great, because the maser isn't obligated to do the mitzvahs. So he doesn't care. If he's not obligated to observe a losa, say, and he can't, and he's gonna, so then he doesn't have to do the losa. So put on him shatnas. He doesn't care. But a mitzvah asay is to gain an extra level, gain an extra madrega within the person, and that is something that he would always want to have. So he's not commanded to, but he still wants to be able to do it. People volunteer to do mitzvahs to gain an extra madrega, and he can't do that. That indeed is taunting him. That indeed makes him feel like he's missing something, the difference between mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lais saseh. Okay, so this is what he says to me. Again, I'm not completely satisfied that I understand exactly why he would ignore what we would see as the inherent qualities of mitzvah lais saseh as something to avoid in formulating this approach. Okay, now, the Maral, however, towards the end of this perek, he just backtracks a little bit. And he says, one second. There is a medrash, a famous medrash, because it's quoted by Rashi. Rashi says that when Yaakov came to meet Esav, what did he say? He said, Im Lavan Garti, I lived with Lavan. And what do Chazal say, Im Lavan Garti? Garti is the same letters as Taryag. He said, I lived with Lavan and I kept all the Taryag mitzvahs. So it sounds like they kept the Taryag mitzvahs. Taryag mitzvahs includes both the positive commandments and the prohibitions. And this was Yaakov, not Avram. What's going on? So he says, well, a couple of options here. One option is, let's go back a little bit on what we said before. Before, earlier in the parak, he said, Avram kept all of the Torah because Torah is called Torah's Chesed, and Avram was Chesed, so he was inherently connected to Torah. So he asked the Maral, well, Torah is also called Torah's Emes, and Yaakov Avinu is connected to Emes, so he should keep the whole Torah. But he said, and as we discussed, well, Emes really isn't there in this world the same way that Chesed is. The world is built on Chesed. The world is built despite Emes, as we talked about there. But he says, well, it could be that because Yaakov is Midas Emes, that's why he may have kept the Torah as well. If you have an indication from that Chazal of Im Lavan Garti that he did, it would be because of Yaakov Avinu's connection to Emes. Okay, that would be the idea. He kept it, and maybe he kept it too. But he says, but then what about the two sisters? What about the two sisters? How could Yaakov say, I kept the Torah mitzvahs if he married two sisters? Says the Maral, well, Yaakov only married these two sisters. He didn't marry any other two sisters. In other words, Yaakov Avinu didn't view himself as being removed from the prohibition of marrying two sisters. He still had the mitzvah of not marrying two sisters. So why did he marry Rachel and Leah? He married Rachel and Leah because it was clear to him, he knew that he needed to marry Rachel and Leah. Chazal tell us, according to one version of Chazal, that Reuven and Shimon and Levi, right, who did they marry? They married their sisters. According to one version of Chazal, to Umay Sneldu and Ashvatim. Because we don't have them going back to Aram. So who else did they marry? Did they marry Canaanite women? So one version says, yeah, they married Canaanite women. By the time we got to the Shvatim, we didn't care so much. Not that they didn't convert, you understand. But what I mean is that for Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, you can't marry a Kanani, you're a patriarch. You have to go back to Aram. Yitzchak, we're going to send Eliezer to get a wife for you from there. By the Shvatim, we say, they seem so relaxed. Right? But why? At the root of the Avos, it was that much more important that it had to be from there. The Shvatim, maybe they married Kananim. But there's another version which Chazal say, which is that Tu'uma is Nogli Mashvatim. There were twins born with each one of them. How did they marry their sister? Because they saw in the fact that each of the Shvatim was born with another half, with a girl, that this was what was destined for them to do. This is what was destined for them to do. Chesed who? The Pasuk says a person's not supposed to marry his sister. It's chesed. Right? So chesed there simply is a term of disgrace, even though chesed normally means kindness. But the Gemara Darshans, it means the opposite of chesed. But the Gemara Darshans, no. Chesed asa HaKadosh Baruch Hashem did a kindness. Who would Cain marry? Who would Hevel marry? The first two children of Adam. Right? Did Adam have girls? The Pasuk doesn't record it. Say Chazal, yes he did. They had twins that were born. They were their own children. They were their own sisters. Kadosh Baruch Hu allowed them for building a world. When we start Klal Yisrael, it's also building a world. They married their sisters. There was such a thing as something which they saw al yidei ruach hakodesh that was destined, that was something that they had to do. And that was what Yaakov had. He's had it with Rachel and Leah. Right? He saw, certainly had it, we know how clearly he had it with Rachel. But this was it. So, of course, he kept the Tarig Mitzvahs, except what Hashem told him not to. What Hashem told him not to, he didn't keep the Tarig Mitzvahs. That was the idea. So therefore, maybe, says the Maral, this issue of the marrying twins, it's not because it's Chutz Laretz, it's not because they didn't keep Laisa says, it's because he needed to do that. And Hashem was saying, you have to do this exceptional, unusual thing because you need to do this. This is different than everything else. That was what he had to do. And so, concludes the Maral, and he says, well, you know, it's possible, once we say this, that Yitzchak also kept the Torah. That everybody kept the whole Torah. Because they always kept the whole Torah, like everybody else understood, like you understood before you started learning this. Because you heard that the others kept all of the Torah. It wasn't just Avram, it was Yitzchak, it was Yaakov. However, Avram Avinu, the Pasuk says that he kept the Torah. Shama Avram B'Keli, right? Vayishma Mishmarti Mitzvaysai Chukaysai Seiraysai, right? The Torah says it because Avram Avinu was so connected to Torah because of Torah's Chesed. Yaakov, Yitzchak, they weren't so inherently connected to all of the Torah in that sense the way Avram Avinu was. So the Torah doesn't say it. But they still may have done it. They still very much may have done it. That's what the Maral writes here. And again, he says, look at well in my Gur Aryeh in Vayigash, where you'll see in this week's Parsha, indeed, that he writes this whole piece. Some differences, some embellishments, but he writes this whole piece over there as well about the Avos observance of Kol HaTorah. He discusses it by Shol Ben Haknanis, actually, where he talks about where it enumerates the 70 souls who went down to Mitzrayim, and it alludes to one of the children of Shimon being Shol, the son of the Kenani. Who was that? The Kenanis. Who was that? Because I'll say that was the son of Dina. He married his sister Dina. So the Maral gets into that whole thing over there as well. Okay.
Don't we also say that Yosef married his daughter, Dina?
Yeah.
So she had two children?
Hmm?
She had two children from Shem? What was the...
No, she married her brother.
Again, what?
We say right now that there was one...
Shimon married Dina.
Right.
And from Shimon she had a child.
Oh, okay.
According to that Chazal that you're alluding to, when Shem was with Dina, she also had a child.
Okay.
And they sent away that child to Mitzrayim.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then she ended up marrying Yosef.
I thought it was Potiphar's daughter.
She was sold to Potiphar.
So it wasn't a blood daughter.
That's a Medrash. That's what the Medrash says. That's what the Medrash says. Yosef didn't just stop marrying an Egyptian woman. He actually ended up marrying the other one who was sent off from Shechem. Yosef was sent off from Shechem to Mitzrayim, and the daughter of Dinah was sent off from Shechem to Mitzrayim.